And a very warm welcome to Central Stage. It's great to have you with us. Now, a new wave of ethnic and sectarian violence has targeted defenseless Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Over 300 Muslims have been killed in recent attacks by Buddhist extremists as the world's virtually ignoring this appalling situation. Now, the current sorry state of affairs may well lead to extermination of the entire population of Rohingya Muslims if a drastic actions not taken now. Welcome back. Now, today we'll be getting insights from our two top guests. Now, hopefully shortly in the studio, we'll have the pleasure of being joined by well-established professional journalist, Mr. Hamid Golpira. Let me just tell you that Hamid Golpira is a top writer working with Tehran Times, and he's also working for Press TV. Now, over the phone from London, I'm very pleased to be joined by an established political analyst and Islamic scholar, Sayyid Mohammad Razavi. Welcome to Central Stage.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for hosting and inviting me for the show.
It's a great pleasure to have you with us. Now, some background information on Sayyid Mohammad Razavi, top lecturer in Islamic studies and a renowned minister of religion for over 25 years, having delivered lectures in many parts of the world, including Europe, Australia, the States, and South America in several languages. Now, Sayyid Razavi is also an established political analyst. Now, we'll take a short break, but after the break, we'll be talking about the recent attacks against defenseless Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. So please do stay with us.
The most recent wave of communal violence broke out last week after Buddhist extremists attacked Rohingya Muslims and set fire to their homes in several villages in Rakhine State. It's quite appalling that instead of protecting the defenseless Rohingya Muslims, Myanmar Army forces allegedly provided the Buddhists with containers of petrol to set ablaze the houses of Muslim villagers and force them out of their houses. So far, over 300 Muslims have been killed in recent attacks by Buddhist extremists in Myanmar, as a new wave of ethnic and sectarian violence has targeted Rohingya Muslims in the country. According to a Muslim community leader, at least 50,000 Rohingyas have been displaced in the fresh round of violence in the country's western regions. Earlier on Tuesday last week, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, the UNHCR, had said that there was a shortage of food, water, and medical help at the already overcrowded camps in western Myanmar. Antonio Guterres added, "It's clearly urgent that law and order be restored to prevent further violence and that access is facilitated so that aid can be provided to those in need." In another alarming statement jointly made by the UN Special Rapporteur on Myanmar, Thomas Oji Quintana, and independent experts on minority issues, it was stressed that this situation must not become an opportunity to permanently remove an unwelcome community. The UN investigator and experts fear Myanmar is seeking to get rid of nearly 1 million of its population. However, the Western governments, among many others, have chosen to take Yangon's side by remaining silent and simply looking away.
Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, just to let you know that we're now joined by an established and professional journalist, Hamid Golpira. Hamid, it's great to have you with us.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Great. Now, we actually want to talk about the situation of Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar, which is actually a very, sad situation, a very sorry state of affairs at the moment. Now, first, let's go to London, where we're joined by Sayyid Razavi. Now, violence against the stateless Myanmar's Muslims have been going on for centuries now, but Sayyid Razavi, such violence has gained in strength since a few months ago. In fact, Myanmar decided to settle its centuries-old scores with Muslims at this point in time. Why do you think? Why now?
I think this is a well-planned event, and especially this is happening now when the Middle East is going through a lot of problems.
Right.
I think the aim is to find an excuse to establish American bases in the middle of north of India to control China and India both, and maybe in long term this will increase, and America will find an excuse to establish its base. I have heard they are already planning to establish their bases there, and it's quite surprising that the Nobel Prize winner and the Burmese leader is silent on this, and it seems that complete hypocrisy is being practiced, and total double standards are in practice, and nobody really cares.
Right.
And this, I would also blame Muslim leaders for ignoring the poor Muslim areas of the world.
Right. Said Rasovic, you just referred to the Nobel Peace Prize winner, and I'd like to talk about that person for a moment. You know, probably she doesn't want to lose support of the actually those Buddhists, because we know that she's supported by Buddhists. And my second question basically is about Buddhism itself, because I know that one of your areas of expertise is comparative religion, and we know that Buddhists are normally associated with being calm and peaceful. So what we're seeing at the moment has nothing to do with peace and you know that sort of state of affairs.
Yeah, this is showing their double standard. I mean, if they are calm and peace-loving people, then why they are treating Muslims like that? I mean, these people have not just suddenly migrated and settled in that part of the world. They have been there for, they have been living there at least for several decades, or more than even 100 years, according to some reports.
Right.
And they were there. I mean, this shows that they were mistreated and I mean, racially abused. I mean, it wouldn't be wrong to say that this is Holocaust is taking place against Muslims there.
Mm. Great. Thank you very much indeed, said Razavi, for that. Now let's talk about another issue, Hamid, and that issue basically is the World Bank announcement a couple of days ago. It was actually announced that fresh aid of up to $245 million will be given to the Myanmar government, and that's despite the massacre and atrocities being committed against Muslims. So that's a bit strange, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. And well, the thing is, this Myanmar-Burma has been fairly isolated from international trade to a large extent for 30, 40 years and more. And they had the junta running the country, and they basically still run the country in some way, although there's a kind of civilian government facade that's kind of making some kind of transition, which is not completely happening, but some movement has happened. So you could say the international capitalist world wants to get some more connections there, that like for long periods of time China had you know, it was somewhat its sphere of influence, they had trade there, and plus, you know, other countries didn't always want to trade there because of the situation there. So one could see it as you know, the international, whatever, the international capitalist industrialist, the big countries in economic terms wanting to get their, you know, their opportunities, their trade and, you know, opportunities with Myanmar that they didn't have for so many years, that they felt they lost out, and that China had, you know, it as its sphere of influence. And so I don't think they're so much concerned with human rights, whether it be for the the Muslims or any of the other people of Myanmar. You have like Karen people looking for independence, you know, they have the Karen rebels for a long time, or at least a degree of autonomy, other people. So like Myanmar is a fairly diverse place.
Right.
It's a fairly diverse place, but maybe we could get into this issue of Buddhism a little bit. That's okay.
Cause right. I know you've been actually traveling a lot in the region and probably been in contact
with some
Buddhists.
Well, Indonesia, I didn't really go to the Buddhist lands, but I know a little bit about Buddhism and I read Buddhist texts, and I can tell you, like maybe we could see this as something like it's not good to say it's kind of a Buddhist-Muslim question. I mean, maybe we could say like every person who identifies as Buddhist in Myanmar is not against the Muslims. So that's to begin with, not correct to say that like that. And then we could also view these people say okay, they're fake Buddhists. Like you have false Christians, you have false or fake Muslims, fake whatever, fake Buddhists, because Buddhism is about harmony.
So saying it has nothing to do with Buddhism.
Well, maybe in a you know, these people's misunderstanding of Buddhism. But Buddhism is about nonviolence. Anyways, it says don't kill a bug, for no reason. Buddha says so. Why should they harm people? You know, so we could see it as a clash between fake Buddhists and Muslims.
If you see it like that,
it's different. You know, and also we could see it as if people misunderstand it as an Islam Buddhist or Muslim Buddhist clash, it breaks up, you know, any efforts of people to make some kind of, you know, multicultural harmony in the world, which there may be certain efforts in various areas, in various parts of the world to do this kind of stuff, to break people up by sect and religion, or even it could be caste or it could be race or tribe, but these types of things break people up and ruin efforts towards a harmonious multicultural world.
What we've actually been seeing when it comes to Buddhism, I mean, we've seen some Buddhists protesting by setting fires on themselves, but we've never seen a Buddhist setting fire on somebody else. That's what we're seeing.
Well,
at
one
the moment,
could see them as fake Buddhists, whereas like in Vietnam, the Buddhist monks who set themselves on fire to protest the Vietnam War that the USA was waging at the time. I mean, that could be like, although to kill oneself is also not considered usually good in Buddhism, but at the same rate, I mean, some of them interpreted it as some way that it was a legitimate protest in the context of Buddhism. Although in most cases, for the most part, suicide is not considered good in Buddhism, like it's not considered good in almost every religion. Although it seems like maybe they interpret it as a self-sacrifice for something better.
What about Aung San Suu Kyi? She's not actually protesting. She's supposed to take some sort of action or say something. She's been rather silent.
Well, I think she finds herself in the middle somewhere. I mean, she might have some sentiment toward the people, but at the same rate, I think, like after all these years of being like somewhat in the political wilderness, we could say she was under house arrest.
Right.
Her party seemed to have won an election over 2 decades ago, and then was kept out of parliament, kept out of power, and then like now there's some movement toward making some kind of progress and allowing a little bit of a democratic transition to happen in this country, Myanmar, Burma, or whatever you want to call it. So I think she feels in the middle a little bit. If certain people have this misunderstanding of Buddhism, whether they be fake Buddhists or whatever we want to call them, maybe she feels that that's some kind of constituency to get her party some votes. Mm-hmm. Like I think she might have some sentiments for these people to think that this is not just. Because in other things she was talking about issues of justice and rights, but maybe she's wanting to just be. You know, how do you say, follow an expedient political policy to not lose votes potentially for her party. I mean, I don't know if that's actually the case, but I think it might be the case.
Right, great. Thank you very much, Hamid, for that. Now, we know that Kenthan Shankar, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, the World Bank's country manager for Myanmar, said a couple of days ago, quote, we actually want the people of Myanmar and the poor in particular to see the reform can lead to real benefits. Now, we're here to help Myanmar reduce poverty by strengthening institutions, supporting projects for the poor, end quote. So Syed Razavi, so most probably he's not considering the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar as a part of his people.
According to the research which has been done regarding these people, they have been living there for many years. And if we start this kind of discrimination, then everybody should go back to their homelands, and
right.
nobody should. I mean, now the world has become a global village. We live together.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the city of London. I mean, there are people from all different faiths and races here. I mean, in America, now the Caucasian people are in minority. Other people are in majority. So if this is the criteria that only original Burmese should live there, then this is a totally racist point of view. I mean, the Burmese or people from Myanmar should consider these people as part of their nation, part of people who have contributed a lot to their country by their hard work. Apparently, these are the hard working people there, and they have ignored all their contributions to their country, and then suddenly treating them like that.
Right. Great. Thank you very much. Now, the plight of the Rohingya Muslims came into spotlight a few months ago in the absence of mainstream media coverage. Now, apparently, citizen journalism and social networking websites played an important part in shedding light on the people described by the United Nations actually as one of the most persecuted minorities in the world. So, Hamid, we're not seeing mainstream media taking drastic action to portray the situation in Myanmar, and basically we'd had social networking websites, we've had a sort of journalism based on the documents and videos provided by citizens. So how do you read into this?
The alternative media is always going to be at least more favorable, more interested in issues that are not covered by the mainstream Western media.
Right.
But there's also the problem with, the Islamic world's media outlets have to do things that are related to Islam or related to social justice. And if we're slow on the uptake, if we're one can't say that that's having something to do with Western media outlets, which have all of them have their own agendas. They
right.
have their own outlook on things. So yeah, there's it's a little bit of a complicated thing that you have to see it as a broader thing, and some of these Islamic world media outlets could be considered to be maybe not really mainstream, but they're starting to get a little bit more coverage. They're noticed at least around the world. It's not like there's second or third or fourth level media outlets. I mean, there's some recognition of these Islamic world media outlets. I mean, they have to have a higher profile still, but more work must be done to give them a higher profile. But like I say, at the same rate, they have to have more coverage of all these issues and more serious coverage, because like our other guest said, that the leaders of the Islamic world are ignoring the poor of the Islamic world. Well, that is true, but
right.
also the media outlets are ignoring this to a degree. And the media outlets are not all directly connected to all the leadership. The leadership of Islamic countries, if they're not so interested in the plight of the masses of the Islamic world, okay, that shouldn't
right.
be taken as the media outlets are just supposed to follow suit and follow that policy. But like I said, people have to be more educated. What I always say, if the Ummah wants to be one, okay, we have to know things about the Ummah. Who are Rohingya? I don't know. Who are West Africans? Who are, Niger people, Nigerian? Who are Tanzanians? Who are Comoro Islanders? Who are, Chechens? Who are Tatars? All the various parts of the Islamic world. Because And this gets back to education. Maybe we have to educate. If you want to have one Islamic world, okay, people have to know who these people are, where they are, how can we interact, how can we act more as one? Because if the Islamic world acts as one, you'll see a lot more progress. And if it has a new leadership that's more concerned about the plight of the poor people, and the really oppressed masses, because people have lack of education or not good access to education, some not even good access to enough food and clean drinking water, and various other services, medical and health care. So, there could be a completely different Islamic world. A little bit of investment, a little bit of concern
right.
on things, lifting the standard of living. If you compare the standard of living of the Islamic world to some other parts of the world, it's not good. But some is because you have these overly class-oriented, and even some that seem to have a kind of pseudo-caste-oriented ruling class people that are not terribly concerned about the masses of their countries or the greater Islamic
right.
world. So if we try to change that,
right.
and the media can push that,
But, I know that the case of the Islamic Unity is very dear, close to your heart,
yeah.
and have been actually carrying out lots of studies on how to achieve this. But when it comes to the governments, harmony among Muslim governments, even when we talk about the organizations which are supposed to represent
yeah.
the interests of the Muslim
like the
governments.
OIC.
So,
yeah.
How do you see any role being played when it comes to these countries? I mean, do you see enough attention being given to this, for example, this particular case when it comes to Muslim countries and Muslim organizations?
Well, this particular case has received minimal attention. I wouldn't say it's received
zero
attention, but...
Because Myanmar government is taking some steps, they think that they're taking some steps towards democracy, and they actually...
Yeah, but that should be irrelevant to that.
Right.
You see what I mean? I mean, if somebody takes steps toward democracy and does 10 things, 10 human rights violations, I mean, okay, it should be seen in context.
Right.
Okay, if you want to say good for moving toward democracy and human rights,
okay, you
can say good for that and bad for, we disagree with... these other points. It doesn't necessarily undermine their movement towards
right.
some kind of more egalitarian or more democratic or more just system if you criticize certain issues. I mean, maybe one doesn't want to overly criticize everything when some slight amount of progress is happening, but at the same rate, you don't want to underestimate or to pull punches, so to say, on something that it really needs
Excellent.
To be addressed.
Great. Thank you very much, Hamid, indeed, for that. Now, let's take another short break. After the break, we'll be talking about some other issues concerning the plight of the Rohingya Muslims. It's interesting to know that probably you already know that the Rohingya Muslim community is also referred to as Palestine of Asia. So please just stay with us for that and more. Again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, the UN has described the Rohingya Muslim community as the Palestine of Asia and one of the most persecuted minorities in the world. These are very strong statements by the United Nations, aren't they, Syed Razavi? And it's also been compared to Srebrenica. Although not enough attention has been given to the issue of Palestine and Srebrenica, we know about both of them, but much less information has been available about the Palestine of Asia. Why do you think?
Again, I mean, we ignore the poor people of the world. This is a real test for the Muslim Ummah, Muslim world, that if they really consider themselves as Muslim, they should feel the pain and the pain of the Muslims in Myanmar or Burma, whatever you call. They are going through difficulties, and we should stand up. There are so many Muslim countries.
Right.
Why don't they get united and go to United Nations or other international organizations and raise objections about this? Why Muslim countries don't stand up and boycott Myanmar until it establishes justice for everyone? It gives equal right to everyone. We have resources, we have power, but what we are doing, unfortunately, is fighting and killing each other while others are killing Muslims. So we need to wake up, we need to be together and recognize our real enemy. I mean, who is trying to make us fight? Only a few years ago you would see all this happening in occupied Palestine. And
right.
now what we witness is occupied Palestine is at peace, and no suicide bombers or anything is nothing of this sort is taking place there, mm-hmm. and everything is now happening within Muslim world. This shows this is obvious plot to kill and harm the Muslims. So we need to be united together as Muslims around the world.
Okay, but say, Razavi, in the absence of a drastic measure, by the UN, do you think that, because I put also that, the same question to Hamid, our knowledgeable guest in Tehran studio, do you think that the UN, in the absence of any drastic measure by the UN, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or probably the non-aligned movement, could take any measures to stop the violence? Are they in a position to do this, do you think?
I think they, especially now that Iran is the president of non-aligned movement, and also Muslim world should hold an emergency meeting and pass resolutions against them. And then it will, I think that would lead into United Nations as well.
Right.
And we should boycott the Myanmar government until it gives the rights of Muslim to them.
Great. Thank you very much. Now, Hamid Serazavi was talking about boycotting Myanmar and probably also the West when it comes to human rights violations. In some particular cases, the West is very adamant, on...
They have double standards.
Right, tackling the issue, the problem. But when it comes to Myanmar, probably there are good opportunities for investment when there is it's a country which has not been open to the world for a long time.
It's a frontier. Yeah,
so
it's like a frontier for the capitalists and investors.
Right.
Yeah, they see it as kind of virgin territory. It's a frontier. They have certain resources, and it's not been exploited. So
it's a very rich country in terms of natural resources.
Not terribly rich, but fairly rich at least. Right. It has opportunities for investment. But one thing I want to say that about things for the Islamic world to do besides resolution or boycotting the government, that there's also just in general they could make some kind of trade, put economic pressure on Myanmar and say, okay, treat the Rohingya Muslims of the country correctly, or we won't trade with you, because they feel like, I say, again, it's this frontier, it's a place that, it's one of the few places that the international capitalists haven't had massive investments and massive exploitation, so they view it as this frontier, and they feel like they're the new kids in the block in the big, investment world and all of that. The opportunities for foreign investment and raising their economy, boosting their economy, are very great at this point in time. So the Islamic world, which is, maybe approximately 1/4 of all the people of the earth, or a little bit more or less, but approximately that, and many of them live in, Islamic majority countries, not all of them, you have India and other places, but a lot of them live in Islamic majority countries. So if those Islamic majority countries start to say, okay, we won't trade with you, Myanmar, we won't trade with you if you don't treat, the Rohingya Muslims of your country fairly. So this kind of economic pressure, could get some results than just some slogans or some, basic, declarations and different things. Have some, like now countries are responding to like economic pressure. So they say, hey, you have opportunities. Mm-hmm. We could invest in your country. Islamic countries could invest, or they could not invest. They could withhold investment. They could withhold trade if you don't treat the Rohingya Muslims correctly. So that's an opportunity. Like I said, especially again, that Myanmar feels they're the new kids on the block in the big world trade, scene. So,
But in terms of the political system, do you think that some people say that it's not a democratic nation.
Well, it's
just
not,
junta in disguise.
Yeah,
so probably it's not. It's like the previous system, but you're just pretending to see some.
But at the same rate, whatever. Even if the junta is completely controlling things behind the scenes, which I think they mostly are, although they may eventually let some kind of democratic transition happen, it seems like they're open to at least some things, or at least the appearance of that. The thing is, however it is, they want trade, whether they're just or not just, whether they're democratically elected or whether they're
isolated for years, so probably it doesn't affect them very much.
Well,
does
no,
it?
But now they're beginning to realize that with globalization, with that it's a whole new world, it's a whole new ball game, that they're starting to realize that they don't want to be left behind. Like neighboring countries, Vietnam is beginning to be booming, maybe not that much, but neighboring countries like Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, like in their neighborhood, in the ASEAN region, with Association of Southeast Asian Nations, some countries are beginning to take off a bit. And some of that is because, or a lot of that is because of things like foreign direct investment, trade with other countries, and reformed economic policies. Instead of having it so stagnant and having a small ruling class and sometimes financial and economic officials of the government, taking these wrong policies, adopting wrong policies that actually stifled their trade. They're starting to realize, let's be more open to the world. Look what Vietnam is doing. Look what Thailand is doing. Look what Indonesia is doing. Look what Malaysia is doing.
Okay.
And Myanmar, whatever their system is,
is lagging behind.
Yeah, it's lagging behind, and they have to be thinking that we have to start taking off economically too. We can't miss the train. We can't miss the boat because it might not come again.
Excellent.
So.
Thank you very much.
Indeed.
Now, Syed Razavi, I just want to mention one point about the timing of all this. We know that probably the problems between the Rohingya Muslims and the other segments of the population, particularly those in the Rakhine states, probably is there for quite some time. But do you think that probably one of the reasons that this has come into the timing of all this is because lots of attention has been made to the developments in the Middle East, particularly the recent developments in Syria. So lots of attention has been paid to the situation in Syria, and not so probably they thought it's a very good opportunity for them to actually take care of the Rohingya Muslims.
Well, I mean, if we look at the recent development in the world, and especially China, India, they are growing economies of the world.
Right.
America and all so-called superpowers have realized that they have no control anymore. Therefore, they are trying to create trouble and find excuses to establish bases around the world, especially as your other guest was mentioning, that they are looking for resources, and Burma or Africa is the adventure ground for these people, these so-called superpowers or ex-superpowers. They are not superpowers anymore. They are losing control. So what they are trying to do is divide and rule and gain access to new resources so they could continue their supremacy over the world. And I would really warn India and China to beware of what's going on in Burma. And this might become an excuse for them to place fitna or trouble in the middle of them, and from this they would make these two countries to go to war with each other, and then they would be the ones who would gain from it.
Now, I mean, talking about the Rohingya Muslims, that there are about 1 million Rohingya Muslims. So it's not a small minority, million. So why don't they actually try to integrate this, even if they call it a minority or whatever, why don't the Myanmar government try to integrate them into the population?
Well, some of it, like I say, Myanmar is a fairly diverse country with different ethnic groups. Some don't really, they have not been favorable to the central government either. And a lot of this conflict is kind of some of the other Rakhine, whatever is the Rakhine state people that are against the Rohingya Muslims. Not so much like all of the country. Some don't have so much contact with them, or they're not. Opposed to them or something. Of it is a regional thing, it might even be there a battle for, it seems in some ways, some kind of resources or economic opportunities on a local scale.
Right.
And also it seems that there's a degree of racial prejudice also in this. So it isn't like fake Buddhist against Muslims too. There's a kind of racial thing too, or ethnic or tribal. Like, okay, they're a little bit different.
They're
ethnic
from Bangladesh, probably. They're not in.
Or maybe some of their ancestors from a long time ago. Actually, they're probably somewhat mixed at least, but maybe they're less mixed than the neighboring people.
Right.
They might not be. They're not exactly the same ethnic group or racial origins as the neighboring people in Rakhine. So some of that is kind of a local issue, and maybe the central government is manipulating that a little for some kind of other means that, you know, some other objective they have, maybe an objective that we don't exactly see right now, but they, you know, because in the long term, it's in their best interest to have a reasonable amount of stability. Like I said, they're trying to deal with these other ethnic groups that were trying to separate from the government. So they see, you know, to have a reasonable amount of stability for them to move forward. Like, because however they want to move forward, in trade, in economic things, in political life, even in like social life and civil society, they need a certain amount of stability to make things go forward.
Right. So what's your prognosis? How do you see the future?
Well, it's hard to determine what exactly would happen, but I mean, if they are pragmatic in the government of Myanmar, although like I say, some local people are a little bit getting out of control too. You know, it isn't like the government is ordering these people to have a riot or to you know, burn the Rohingya's village or something. But if they're pragmatic, I see them as at least trying to you know, get this situation somewhat under control, if not totally under control, at least get it somewhat under control, that, you know, things seem, you know, at least somewhat normal, you know.
But, you know, this hatred when you burn somebody's village, whole village, it should be a very deep amount of hatred. So where does this hatred come from?
Well, some things can also be manipulated. People get wrong ideas. I mean, you see all kinds of things happening all over the world, and like sometimes, you know, like something like, you know, the former Yugoslavia, where you used to have, I don't know, Bosnian Muslims and Croatian Catholics and Serbian Orthodox Christians, like, all living next to each other, and then suddenly 90% of them all hate each other and are at war, like, just like that, or over a really short transition period. I mean, sometimes it can be certain people agitating for certain things, you know. Sometimes it can just be a kind of misunderstanding. Some say, oh, how come this other group, they're different than us, they're the other, how come they're getting certain benefits, how come they have the job that I should have, how come their community is getting a little bit more successful, you know, when we are not, you know, and oh, they're taking away our rights, and then if you have certain kind of demagogues or, you know, like kind of, I don't know, tribally or racially populist, you know, elements promoting that, so it can take it, you know, they can manipulate, you know, the lack of understanding of the people. So things can get out of control very quickly.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Syed Raza, we just have about 20 seconds left. Your final words.
I wanted to add that I have some Burmese or Myanmar Muslims here in London.
Right.
They are not even allowed to have Muslim names because these Muslims who live in London from Myanmar.
Right.
I looked at their passports. They didn't have Islamic name. I said, but you're Muslim. He said, yeah, the government doesn't allow us to have Muslim names.
Okay.
So this is the extreme example, this is not from now. This has been going on for many years.
Great.
Muslims have been living there for a long time, and they are not even allowed to have Muslim names.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. That's very sad indeed, but unfortunately we have to end it there. We're out of time. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Syed Mohammad Razavi, top political analyst and Islamic scholar in London, and Hamid Golpira, established journalist and writer working for Tehran Times and Press TV. Now, thanks to both of you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming over, for talking to us, and for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much. It's great to have you with us. Thank you.